My grandparents were Catholic, immigrated from Northern Ireland in the 1930s to the United States, seeking a better life. And I know your family too, sí, fled fascism. And you have talked about with migrants, many of them children, that you encourage governments to build bridges, not walls.
Migration is something that makes a country grow. They say that you Irish migrated and brought the whiskey. Or that the Italians migrated and brought the mafia. It's a joke. Don't take it badly. But migrants sometimes suffer a lot. They suffer a lot.
Performing tonight at the Funny Bone, Pope Francis, everybody. Give it up for him. He's your headliner this evening. That's a joke. No, it's fine. He's, you know, this is an interview you did with Norah O'Donnell on 60 Minutes talking about immigration. And, you know, these are stereotypes from the past. And historically, you know, we have treated incoming waves of migrants, which have historically been a great sense of economic productivity for this country, with suspicion and oppression. And it's always been an unhealthy situation. And then we always, you know, oh, we were so dumb for treating the Italians that way. We were so dumb for treating the Chinese that way. We were so dumb for treating the Irish that way. But not those Mexicans, you know, like there's kind of, you know, just it's worth listening to this a little bit.
I grew up in Texas. And I don't know if you've heard, but the state of Texas is attempting to shut down a Catholic charity on the border with Mexico that offers undocumented migrants humanitarian assistance. What do you think of that?
Una locura.
That is madness, sheer madness. To close the border and leave them there, that is madness. The migrant has to be received. Thereafter, you see how you're going to deal with them. Maybe you have to send him back. I don't know. But each case ought to be considered humanely, right?
Do as much as is humanely possible and also stop incentivizing the crossing. Do, in fact, return them. But generally speaking, I actually agree with him about this, that we, if there are hundreds of thousands of people putting their lives at risk to cross our southern border, we can't just ignore that and pretend that's not true. But what's the policy? Well, as he even says, sending them back may be the right response to once they get here, but don't let them die in the desert. You know, that's not really an answer. But, you know, it's a much more complicated problem than that. I just thought it was an interesting way to begin this interview that talked about a whole bunch of different things, including...
Your first trip as Pope was to the island of Lampedusa, where you talked about suffering. And I was so struck when you talked about the globalization of indifference. What is happening?
Do you want me to state it plainly? People wash their hands. There are so many Pontius Pilates on the loose out there who see what is happening, the wars, the injustice, the crimes.
The Pontius Pilates, wow.
That's okay, and wash their hands. It's indifference. That is what happens when the heart hardens and becomes indifferent. Please, we have to get our hearts to feel again. We cannot remain indifferent in the face of such human dramas. The globalization of indifference is a very ugly disease. Very ugly.
I actually very much agree with him about this. The challenge is that because of news, we have, news media and communications pace and the 24-hour news cycle, we have found ourselves exposed to so much horror and suffering in the world that indifference is almost a self-defense psychology mechanism. It's no person has the capacity to be worried and sympathetic to all of the problems that are out there. You'll just cuddle up in a ball and want to die because there's too much to be worried about. So, yes, indifference to local problems, local suffering, things over which you might have some control, I totally agree with him. But in terms of, you know, the way you react to all of these stories, the problem is that we're always having these massive suffering stories shoved in our face from all over the world. And, you know, what can I do about all of it? Well, the answer is nothing. But about some things, you certainly can. This still yet is not the part that got controversy, although it's... His answer here, I'm glad he finally was able to give the answer in sort of voice, even though it's translated. Because so many American news media misrepresented what the Pope was saying on this subject.
Last year, you decided to allow Catholic priests to bless same-sex couples. That's a big change. Why?
No, what I allowed was not to bless the union.
Correct.
That cannot be done because that is not the sacrament. I cannot. The Lord made it that way. But to bless each person, yes. The blessing is for everyone. For everyone. To bless a homosexual type union, however, goes against the given right, against the law of the church. But to bless each person? Why not? The blessing is for all. Some people were scandalized by this, but why? Everyone. Everyone.
And I'm glad he directly confronted her on her misunderstanding, which was widely reported that the Pope had announced blessings for gay couples. That's not what the Pope said. You informally, in person, bless the person. You cannot and shall not, as a contravention of church doctrine, bless the union. And that's as boring a reformulation of standard Catholic doctrine as you could possibly have. And yet again, as often happens, American media just completely got this wrong. This was the part that got a little bit more attention and people were, you know, frustrated by this.
There are conservative bishops in the United States that oppose your new efforts to revisit teachings and traditions. How do you address their criticism?
You used an adjective, conservative. That is, conservative is one who clings to something and does not want to see beyond that. It is a suicidal attitude. Because one thing is to take tradition into account, to consider situations from the past. But quite another is to be closed up inside a dogmatic box.
So it's hard to defend describing conservatism as a suicidal ideology. Here's what I think he meant, okay, giving as much, you know, grace to the Pope as I can as a non-Catholic. I think what he meant was, you kind of heard it toward the end, that finding yourself so attached to a dogmatic interpretation of anything, I mean, dogma can be accurate, okay, but being unwilling to revisit and make sure you've got something right. But also, what happens with ideology a lot of times is you are so attached to that that you get your self-worth from the ideology and from repeating it and from saying we are in and you're out and, you know I'm good because I follow this and I know you're bad because you don't follow this. And this is maybe more of a Protestant interpretation, but this is how I'm interpreting what he's saying, is, you know, that's a kind of idolatry. That's a way of thinking that your identity and self-worth come from your belief system and repeating and, you know, living through that again. I know I'm good because I have these political beliefs. I know I'm good because I have these social beliefs. I know I'm good because, well, you know, for Christians, you know you're good because God loves you, because Jesus saves you. You're not good because of these other things. And so I think what he's, which can also be true of liberalism too, is getting locked into that mindset that I believe in climate change activism, or I believe in, you know, LGBT rights, or what, or I believe in, you know, fighting for abortion access. Those two can become locked in ideologies that wind up becoming your source of self-worth. And, you know, that's problematic on its base, in addition to being problematic because of some of the positions involved. So I think that's what he's getting at, but it certainly wasn't, let's say, artfully construed. And if what he meant was that being a conservative is a suicidal ideology, that's, you know, can't really do so much with that one. He then talked about women's reproductive in terms of surrogacy, which is kind of an interesting one.
I know women who are cancer survivors who cannot bear children, and they turn to surrogacy. This is against church doctrine.
In regard to surrogate motherhood, in the strictest sense of the term, no, it is not authorized. Sometimes surrogacy has become a business, and that is very bad. It is very bad.
See, a lot of what he's thinking about is, he's from Argentina, right? So third world situations where women get paid to use their uterus, by wealthy women, and that's part of what he's got in mind, is the almost reproductive trafficking kind of aspect of it. That's not the only objectionable aspect for Catholics, right? The destruction of fertilized embryos is also a major problem philosophically, because if life begins at conception, then you're destroying life. But she comes back to this one more time.
But sometimes for some women, it is the only hope.
It could be. The other hope is adoption. I would say that in each case, the situation should be carefully and clearly considered. Consulting medically, and then morally as well. I think there is a general rule in these cases, but you have to go into each case in particular to assess the situation, as long as the moral principle is not skirted.
And moral principles like not abusing, not taking advantage of, not destroying life, these are all, you know, fairly firm lines for the Catholic. And then the last one here, and I thought this was a particularly interesting way to end the discussion, because it put my like hair up on end the way he said something at the end. But that's because I'm not a Catholic, and I'll explain.
When you look at the world, what gives you hope?
Todo.
Everything.
Uno ve tragedias.
You see tragedies.
Pero ve.
But you also see so many beautiful things.
Cosas lindas. Uno ve madres heroicas.
You see heroic mothers.
Hombres heroicos.
Heroic men. Men who have hopes and dreams.
Mujeres que miran
women who look to the future.
Eso a mí me
that
da
gives
esperanza.
Me a lot of hope.
La gente quiere vivir.
People want to live.
La gente
people
va
forge
adelante.
Ahead. And people are fundamentally good.
Buena. Todos somos
we are all fundamentally
buena.
Good.
Por ahí somos un poco
yes,
pícaros,
there are some rogues and sinners, but the heart itself
es bueno.
Is good.
So I heard that, and as a Protestant, I'm not quite a Calvinist, but you know, somebody who believes in the depravity of man, I'm like, what now? If people are good, then why do they need salvation? Well, this is actually, I looked it up because I was not familiar with this, is relatively standard Catholic doctrine. It's not that people are good enough, it's that, you know, they still need obviously the Holy Spirit and the saving power of Christ in their lives, but what they are is not totally depraved the way the Calvinists might think about them. So I just thought that was an interesting nuance, fairly important distinction between, say, Catholicism and much of Protestantism. But it kind of caught me by surprise, and I thought it was worth mentioning because that is a different view of human nature than many, many Protestants have. So, again, I thought it was a very interesting interview. I think, you know, just a lot of times people don't understand enough to really interpret things properly, listen to them fairly. And I want to talk about this precisely because it had gotten some news earlier in the week.